Okay, today I'm on a Zoom call with Mike O'Neill, who's languishing in the Dominican Republic. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
Right, so for the benefit of our viewers that may not know you, you're the man that has developed the holy grail of punting, something you can use while sat on the beach in the Caribbean while horses win for you in the UK and Australia, earning your living. Is that correct?
That basically sums it up, yes. It's what I do. Moved to the Caribbean about a year ago and enjoy the sun and the weather, and totally different lifestyle to the UK.
So this is something that you've developed. You've beat the bookmakers by using computers and just sort of figures and crunching the figures for years and years. So obviously you're keeping it to yourself. And you're just going to gloat that you're making all this money?
Well, no, Simon, basically 12 years ago I started it and went through the data and I looked at odds. Well, first of all, I started looking at form. And I thought, you know, my whole life is a computer background. So I've been writing software since I was a kid. And I thought, when I retired, I sold my last company. I was still 46. And I thought, well, I want to start something that doesn't involve partners, borrowing money, et cetera, something I could fund myself. And I started looking. I thought, well, if I can write software, then surely I can write something that'll work for horse racing. And a friend put me onto Betfair in 2008 and told me that basically you can lay horses on Betfair. And I thought, well, to myself, there's, you know, never been a poor bookie. So if you can lay horses, then you'll be fine. After about 6 months, I realized it's not quite that simple. So I ended up just starting to write algorithms, taking in form, downloaded all the data from Betfair since day one. Then I started adding, you know, the weather, the conditions, the track, you name it. I added it to the database and tried to pull stuff together to create a program that would basically tell me, you know, which of the two most likely to win. And after about 4 years, I guess I started noticing the odds were far more predictable than the horses. And I started looking more at odds and form at the same time. But I could never write a program that worked with just form. It just doesn't matter what I wrote. And I did write loads and loads of algorithms, but doesn't matter what I wrote. It basically a computer generated number generator could beat whatever I made. Then I started moving away from the form and into the odds to see what I thought I was seeing, if it was true. And by now I've got probably 5 years worth of data and just kept looking at it, studying it, trying to find ways to look at it. And the thing with data is so many ways to look at it and which ways are worthwhile, which ways useless, which way helps, which way doesn't help. And it was just a case of figuring out a way to display that in such a way that you could actually make sense of the data and what sort of things do you need to see. So in the end, we ended up with four ways to look at the odds. We look at the odds on a daily basis. So basically what's happening during the day, like for example, today, the first 10 races, 92% of favorites won, you know, top two won. So you know there's going to be a change. It has to come down to approximately 57% today. So we basically have a graph that shows you over the 10 years what has happened to those odds on this day, this week, over the years. And we basically have a way of compiling a percentage of what we expect favorites to win and outsiders to win. So that's one way we look at the data. So today, as I said, 92%, you know it's going to start coming the other way. You know it has to come. Some outsiders need to come in. Then we have another way of looking at the data. It's basically you pull up the race and it shows you that race for the last 10 years, who's won it, at what odds, and what's come close to it, and the percentage difference between today's favorite price and over the years, the favorite price, what won. Then we have another way of looking where we look at that track on this day and this week for the last 10 years too, and we see, okay, over the last 10 years, there's never been more than three favorites or four favorites that have won. So once those four favorites are out of the way and the data for the day agrees and the data for the actual race agrees, you're starting to sort of say, okay, these are starting to come into my favor now. So now I can start playing. So basically that's what I ended up doing, but it took 6 years, I would say, to figure out what you actually need to see. And there's no one sort of like silver bullet. You have to sort of like be able to be a little analytical and be able to take all that data in and see, okay, I can see what's happening now. It's actually turned into my favor now, and this is what should happen. So basically that was the journey over the 12 years. 3 years ago, we actually wrote the software. When I first started, I didn't really plan on sharing it because I thought, well, you know, if I can make it, what's the point in sharing it? But the end result was it took a lot longer than I thought, cost a heck of a lot more money than I thought it was going to. And I had a Twitter following at that time because I was putting up the basically what I thought for the day, the races I thought for the day that we could easily tell what was going to win, who was in the race and what chances, say, an eighth favorite had of winning that race. So I had quite a decent Twitter following. And the cost of developing the software, as I say, was expensive. So I decided that we'll release it to those, you know, and we'll get 30, 50 people involved. And it also, the main reason I kept going, I mean, when it got bad, like after 6 years and you're still not finding anything, you know, you think you found something and then the next day you haven't. I had a lot of friends that would say, oh, it can't be done. Just can't be done. You can't win money in horse racing. If it could have been done, someone would have done it years ago, you know, typical negativity. And I'm a stubborn type of individual. And when someone says it can't be done, I get so determined that it can be. So I also figured that if I could get 30, 50 users, it'll prove to them beyond doubt that you've found something that works, because people won't pay you if it doesn't work. And that's where we're at the moment. We've actually got about 70 users at the moment. We plan to stop at 100. So that's where we're at the moment.
No, but so it's interesting because your background, you haven't come from like a gambling family or a horse racing family. So, well, I assume you haven't.
No, I haven't actually.
With all this stuff you've put in, wouldn't it have been easier to try and predict the stock market or something like that to make money with money, rather than the total randomness, it seems, of horse racing at times?
Well, actually, horse racing is far from random. It's when you're looking at odds, they always come back to zero. So basically, all you're looking for is, you know, the dips in the odds, they have to go back up to zero. Or if they're above zero, they have to come back down. And when you've got 10 years data you're looking at, you can compare this year, where you are this year, to the last 10 years. So no, I would say it's far from random. In fact, it's more predictable than the stock market. And I was in the stock market in 87, and that cured me of ever being in the stock market again.
Okay, so maybe by using the term random was probably the wrong one, but you learned a lot about odds in that time and you started to see patterns. What was there a moment when you first saw something and you suddenly had that, we actually have got something here?
Basically I was looking at in running odds, and I was trying to figure out if you could do, you know, back at 90%, lay at 80%, etc. And that's when I started noticing that your favorites have, so basically I was able to then see that obviously favorites, forget odds on favorites, but favorites and outsiders, first and second favorite and the outsiders run at about 50% each, right? And that's when I thought, well, if 50% of them are outsiders, why don't we just find out where the outsiders are? And that was the sort of eureka moment. That's like, okay, you don't have to back favorites to make money. You know, there's not a lot of money in backing favorites. You can't get too many wrong. But backing outsiders, you can go a long time. And say, for example, last week I put up on the our chat room that fifth favorite hadn't won at between 40 and 90 BSP for about 2 weeks. And it was down to minus 50. It lost 50 points so far in the last month. And every other year, it had been well over, I've got it on screen, so that's why I'm looking at it. It had been over 100, plus 100. And now, 1 week later, it's at plus 85. So that's when I saw that, you know, you can take the odds and play the odds at a higher than, don't chase the ones that are paying $2 and $3 and $4. Chase the ones that are paying $20, $60, $80, $100. And that was basically the eureka moment, was saying, wow, we've found something here that returns a good amount of money.
Okay, so this, I can hear the cynics would be saying, just because something's a 20-to-1 chance and it's not one for, you know, for this, 20-to-1 chance isn't coming for 30 races, it doesn't mean that the next race, you know. So how would, what's the logic in that?
No, it doesn't mean it will happen in the next race, but you can see over the years that basically it's got down to here. And let's say every other year it's got down to here before it went up. Well, the same thing's going to happen this year. This has to get back to, you know, where it was zero at least. Because all odds over the course of a year, every favorite, like even 1.13s, will end up around about zero at the end of the year. You know, 6.1s will end up at zero at the end of the year. So basically what you're watching is those, the dips and troughs and the highs. And the cynics will say that and say, but we can actually show you on a graph and show you that, okay, at the moment it's minus 50 and the lowest it's ever got in the last 10 years is 40, say, for example. It may not happen in the next race, may not happen in the following one. Okay, I'll give you an example. We had a guy last week chasing seventh favorites. And basically he went the whole week just playing seventh favorites because he knew there'd be 100 points in it. He went 103 races without a win, right? So, and still ended up the 100 points up. So it did take him a week, but the graph still showed that he would make 100 points. So he made the 100 points. So it was made about a 22% return. If it had happened on the first day, then he would have made like a 300% return. So there are days where you'll run it and it takes a little longer than you think to get, well, it takes longer than you'd want it to, but the end result is it still has to go back up to where you do make that money. So like playing the stock market, you just stay there and wait for it and keep, and now that we have AutoBet, you can just set it up at the beginning of the day and let it run for yourself.
And then you said to me before we did this that you spent years to develop a way to dig the data. Now you've probably covered some of that, but I'm a layman. Well, what, just in simple terms, what do you mean by digging the data?
Okay, well, there was a lot of programs out there or little websites where you could go and put in, say, a handicap race, nine runners, and it would tell you how many times it won and how much you would have got a return on. So that's one way of looking at it. But basically what I wanted to do is put in anything and get all the data from whatever I'm asking. So if I wanted to ask a question like, show me all the winners between 40 and 50 BSP in November of every year since 2008. It will come and show me the number of runners, the number of what races those happened in, where those races happened, what week they happened, and what day they happened in, what time they happened even. So it doesn't matter what I put in. If I just put in the track and say track six runners, it'll tell me all the winners at what prices won at those tracks. So so being able to look at any point just by entering two bits of data, you can figure out and look at everything else that's related to it. So instead of having to say, okay, I wonder if handicaps make money, da, 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 you can look at it the other way. Okay, I want to make money at 40 to 60 to 1. What races should I be looking at this week? It'll come back and tell you, well, handicaps at Dundalk, 1 mile, 2 furlongs every year has had a ninth favorite or 10th favorite win it. 8th, 9th, 10th favorite win. So you need to be able to look at the data in many ways, but without having to look at it in such a way that you say, you know, this is the rules and I'm sticking to these rules. It'll find whatever rule you put in, it'll find the answer for you.
Hey, Mike, so you explained a fair bit in the first part, went to the beginning about why you did it and what you've come up with. You said that you're quite stubborn and that one of the things that drove you on was that nobody thought it was possible. So you wanted to prove them wrong. And you also told me that you think people think that data is easy to analyze. Now, you don't agree with that.
No, it's totally the way other people have done it. It's not possible. You've got to look at data, not just in one particular way. You need to look at it and say, okay, this is giving me a yes, this is giving me a yes, and this is giving me a yes. If you look at one thing, like for example, Wolverhampton, and I'm going to back outsiders at Wolverhampton. Now, today, there's never been more than four favorites win at Wolverhampton. Now, if you look at that and make your decisions based purely on that, you would have got burnt many a times because Wolverhampton's last year had two meetings where favorites won every single race. So you need to be able to take the information that says, okay, at the moment today, we're on outsiders or favorites are only at 42%. Here we are coming into Wolverhampton. There should be 53, 54% of favorites win today. So you need to sort of like balance those two things and be able to see. We also look at the race, as a standalone race. And so we look at that, the data from the race. So you can take those three things and put them together and give yourself the confidence to say, this is what's going to happen. With Race Stats app, you don't play every race. I mean, it's impossible. You don't, if you're playing every race, you're not doing it right. It's a case of, you have to look at what's coming in and when the data is in your favor. And I mean in your favor a long way, like 75% chance of you getting it right. So those who come on to a Race Stats app and think they can play every race, they tend not to last long. Those that come in and have the patience to say, okay, I'm not playing that one, I'm not playing that one, I'm not playing that one, I'll play this one. They're the ones that are still with us today. And by the way, when we first started on Twitter, we had about 30 followers initially. And those 28 of those are still with us today, 3 years on. So, you know, they wouldn't be with us if it didn't work.
Okay, it's interesting that you, and also quite attractive to potential users, that you cover Australian and UK racing. Did you notice any significant differences between racing in both countries?
The biggest difference in Australia is the size of the market. It's basically you're in running market 5 days out of seven, unless there's a big meeting on like Melbourne Cup or something, the Victoria Cup or whatever. You just don't have the money available in the market to say, okay, I'm going to be able to bet in running. And all our betting is done in running, because basically we can't make a decision until we have the BSP of the favorite. And that's how everything gets compiled. As soon as the BSP for the favorite comes up, it comes up on the screen to say where you are and what chances you have. So in Australia, our biggest problem is the size of the market and running. So the upside to the Australian market, though, is they have some big price winners. It's not unusual to see a 900-1 IR in pace races, for example, and their harness racing in Australia. So if you can see the pattern there for those and play them, there is an opportunity there. Because one thing about pace races is it's I don't know what happens. I guess they have an accident or something. There's a big pile up. And then all of a sudden, because the in-running money is always available, you know, for a dollar or two. I'm not saying you can put $100 on at 1,000-1, but you'll get, you know, $2 or $3 on at 1,000-1. Now, the difference between that and the UK is the amount of money that's bet in running. I mean, I would say there's never a race in the UK where you haven't got 100,000 plus traded in running, or very few, I should say. Whereas in Australia, I doubt you'll get many races that have over 5,000 in running during the week. Friday, Saturday's a little bit different. So you have to pick your races in Australia, in other words, what I'm saying.
So you have to be, so you can't just really set a bot and go along the beach. You have to actually be active for each race if you're betting on them.
For Australia, you can.
For anywhere.
No. For the UK, you don't really have a problem with it because, you know, basically you put your bets on it. We have also in the analyzer, we have the ability to type in a percentage and see, if I bet everything in this at 95%, how many will I miss or how many will I get? Now, that 95% is based on the Betfair £100, you know, the basically in running. When Betfair published their in running price, what it got to in running, it's based on £100 being traded, right? So the, we can have the ability to also put in, say, give me a 3% variance on that, so or 5% variance, because if I'm only playing for $1 or $2 or $3 or $4, you know, I get a the price will be a little bit higher, a little bit lower for me. So we can actually break that down as well. So playing the UK at night, or, you know, just setting up a bot and letting it run UK, not a problem. And if you do it on the Fridays or Saturdays, or if you found the one of the pace M's, it's due during the week, you can easily set up a bot for that too. Again, if you're only playing for £1 or £2 for a 600 to one or a 700 to one type thing in running.
Okay, you mentioned to me that you've written thousands of algorithms and designed and ditched hundreds of calculators. At what point do you decide that you're barking up the wrong tree?
Basically, when I couldn't get the information I wanted, as far as calculators on screen, to be able to find something that you press one button and you get everything you want to see. You know, that was the calculator problem. The algorithms, that was more based on the form, when I was chasing form and writing algorithms for that. There's no real algorithms. Well, the searches are obviously algorithms, but the actual data getting shown on screen, the calculators that I show the users, the ability for them to find anything instantly. I mean, instantly is about less than a second. That took, as I said, we ditched hundreds of them, and you just couldn't, I wasn't happy until I could see everything I wanted to see, basically. And even then, I realized that one wouldn't do it. And that's why we created Analyzer, as well as the BSP checker. So, you know, we've got four ways now that you look at data for any day or any race.
Now, this is going to be probably a silly question, but can you identify the most important aspect of the data, most important bit of data that you input?
Okay. The thing, it depends on the type of punter you are and what you want to do. Analyzer is more like playing the stock market. Like you say, okay, I know it's going to go back up and I'm going to make 10%, 30%, 50% return on my money. That is one way of looking at the program and say, okay, I'm going to come in and I'm going to run it like a stock market. And then you've got the one where you can come in all day, every day, and look at each race individually and play those individually. So there's two ways to use RSA.
Is there any aspect of form involved as well in your calculations?
No form at all. Zero. No jockeys. You won't find a jockey name or horse name. You'll find no trainers, anything in our databases. It's all odds.
Okay, so weight of money, that's obviously a big aspect.
We don't actually look at weight of money at all. We don't track it, don't keep it. If weight of money worked, then basically you'd always be on favorites. So if you said, okay, where's the most money? The most money is always going to be on the favorite. So I guess you're saying, did a lot of money come late for number, you know, the sixth favorite or the seventh favorite? So
that's exactly what I was thinking. The guy that was waiting for the seventh favorite, if all of a sudden that what was 12th favorite, very late on where the money tends to come, knocked it in, would that not be something that you would put into your calculations to be more likely to win, unless it started second favorite and drifted out to seventh favorite, if you know what I'm saying?
No, because the odds would change because of that. So the more money that was put on at the end, so let's say it was seventh favorite, someone comes and chucks a lot of money on, it'll go to fourth favorite or third favorite or whatever it'll go to. So that's where it sits. So there's no need to watch the weight of money as far as we're concerned. And I have looked into it. It's basically, it becomes the odds. So we're saying that today I'm hunting 15 to 20 BSPs. Now, if that 15 is a third or sixth favorite, whatever, and how it got there, whether it drifted out to there or whether it came into there, is irrelevant to us.
Okay, so your success, we're going back to you again now. This is, you know, this sounds like a real a real brain drain to do this for a long period of your life. Has this success sort of come out of an obsession, really?
Yes, basically 100%. It was just the my friends basically just keeping saying, you can't be done, can't be done, was just no way that I was going to give up. And I mean, there were times that it was pretty depressing when you were sort of like 6 years into it and still hadn't found anything that, you know, you could remotely say worked. And so, you know, you just keep going. And I was putting in 16, 18 hour days every day, taking the data, working it out, you know, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year. So yeah, it became an obsession. And now I've got 60 odd friends in our chat room that it's made it all worthwhile. These people are, you know, have become good friends over the years, and we, you know, they share everything, what they're going to do for the day, how they've done for the day, you know. And these people also are really into their Excel sheets and their data and collection, and able to put up their percentages, results. So it's really great seeing it. So it's made it all worthwhile, basically. Whether I make money or not, it's just good to see the other 60 doing it. So yeah.
Right, mate, I'm sorry, but I've got, as a punter, and I hasten to add, a punter that hasn't been crunching the figures for 13 years, I'm going to go back to this seventh favourite. Now, I think most punters would be a lot happier if they've had their money on one, that it's been backed from a bigger price into a shorter price, rather than having drifted, sometimes remarkably, from a shorter price to a bigger price, which left it seventh favourite. Now, would your program not weight the one that's shortened into rather than the one that's drifted out to slightly differently?
Okay, no, it doesn't. Basically, what we do is we're just looking at odds, right? We don't say back one horse. We never back one horse. If unless you're playing the analyzer at a mode, which is you say, I'm going to back seventh favorites between 40 and 60 to one for the next week until the graph goes back up. But on the day, let's say we're playing a race and it's Ascot, there's 13 runners and the 10th favorite's coming to seventh. All we're going to tell you is the chances of the favorite or second favorite winning, you know, let's say this is the case, fave and second fave have got very little chance of winning this race, right? So you're going to be looking at, well, the way I do it is I look at laying the favorite and betting the ones that can win. And now in the program, it'll say basically, you know, you've got from fifth to 10th that can win it. Over the years, between these odds, so when the favorite's been this price, let's say the favorite's 3.2 today. When it's been 3.2, you've had a fifth, a 10th, a 8th, a 7th win, right? So what we'll do is basically bet 5th to 10th on that race. So we'll cover all of those horses and maybe lay the favorite for 4 or do a bit of inline, bit of hedging during the race. So whether it's coming from 10 to 7 or gone from 7 to 10, is irrelevant. The only thing we want to know is it a favorite that's going to win or an outsider that's going to win? And if it's a favorite and you like playing favorites, you'd leave that race, you know, because basically it's saying don't play it. It's going to be an outsider. And if you like playing the outsiders, then basically it's saying, well, look between these prices, fifth, let's say every year it's one between 8 to 1 to 26 to one. So what is in between those prices today? So it might be 4th to 7th. It might be 7th to 10th that fits into those prices. So that's the way we'd play it. So yes, odds only. It's only the odds. It's not the weight of money or if something's come in and drifted out. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. One of the things that professional punters nearly always say is that they have to keep one step ahead because their edge is always eventually eroded. Is there any logical reason to assume that something that's worked for 10 years will continue to work for the next? Have you created a monster that you're going to have to keep abreast of? Do you like ditch the oldest analysis for the newest analysis? Does it keep progressing, or will you just build a massive database and hope to come up with even stronger figures?
No, we've basically keep 10 years in there. So basically we started with 2008 till now, and now we're basically ditching the first year until we get to 2012. So basically when we hit 2022, then we'll start looking, because what I found in the data was 2008 to 2012 is is a lot different to the data we're getting now. And I think that's because of the introduction of bots. I think bots became far more common in 2012. And what happened to in running prices changed massively at about that time. So at the moment, we have the data going back to 2010. Next year, we'll have it going back to 2011, the year after that, 2012. And then I'll look at it again and say, okay, is there a big difference between 2012 and 2016, for example, and decide whether we keep 2012 when we go to 2023. So yes, to answer your question, there is a difference in the data going back before 2012, but not so much since. Obviously, this year is going to be big difference with 3 months of no racing, and then the last 3 months, you know, double the races that normally held. So this year has been a tougher year than most for data, tracking data. Instead of taking six races for something to happen, maybe it's taking nine. So whether we ditch 2020 at one stage, or put it this way, next year I won't be looking at 2020. If 2020 has a peak and all the other years don't, I'll be ignoring 2020. So yeah, basically you keep an eye on the data and understand what's going on with it.
So Mike, anybody that has looked at your website, and I imagine after this, several will, it's quite impressive. You've got lots of tutorial videos on there. And you also tell your punters that they need to spend at least 30 hours learning how to use the tool that you've developed. So you're looking for a special type of punter already there. And you mentioned that when you had 30 followers on Twitter, 27 is still with you. I mean, is anybody actually using it to bet professionally now?
Yes, we have, I would say, four or five full-time professional punters on there. We say 30 hours because so many people come to us. You know, I would say something like 1 in 23 stays with us for 2 months. 1 in, say, 16 stays with us for 3 months. And then once they've been there for 4 months, they don't leave. You know, because basically it's people come expecting, oh, I can pick this up in 3 seconds. It's not like that. It's so you need to know everything about it. You need to know how to use it. And 30 hours is for anyone that knows Betfair and the exchanges, 30 hours is plenty to learn it. If you don't know Betfair and the exchanges, you could probably double that time.
Okay. So is there a risk that if you say you've got relatively few subscribers and you sort of want to keep it that way, but is there a risk that your users will find the same horses, so the edge will disappear there as the prices erode?
So basically I know that and understand that, and that's why we're going to keep it to 100 maximum users. We're going to, as soon as we get to 100, we track everything, obviously. We track how often our users sign in, et cetera, et cetera. So we know everything about how long everyone spends in there. Again, we love data. So we figure that when we get to 100, we can look at it again. But if every one of those 100 bet $50 every race, we're only changing the market by £5,000. And £5,000 in the in-running market in UK is nothing. So it depends, obviously, if you're backing 1,000 to 1, it's quite a lot. But if you're backing something under the fifth favorite, it's not a lot. So we're confident that we won't make a difference, or our users won't hurt each other up until we get to 100. Now, maybe next year we see, okay, we can go to 200. But right at the moment, I'm saying 100 is more than enough. And actually, it'll probably always be more than enough, because it's I like the little community. I like everyone being friends with each other. I like the fact that they all share with each other. And I think if we get too big, then that will go away. So,
would it? Well, you've probably answered that by what you've just said, because that's what I wasn't expecting you to say. But wouldn't it have been better commercially for you to have continued for sort of further automation, so lazy punters like me just get the selections and you get mean, the bet?
Yeah, push a button and it tells you what to do.
Yeah, exactly. So just do that rather than have to spend 30 hours where you could be laying on the beach next to you. Yeah. You just get the selections, pay a little bit more, put the bot on, and then go back to the, you know, go back to the beach? Would that not have been an easier way of you making a few quid out of it with a bit more effort on the development side?
Right. Okay. First of all, it's 30 hours once. So you only have to put that time in once. And then every day it's an hour at the most. And most of that can be done at night with maybe a few minutes every morning. So, you know, once you put your 30 hours in, it's like learning to ride a bike. Once you've learned all the buttons and what all the buttons do and where to look for everything, you know, it's just a case of, okay, now I want to look at this one. And you learn where to look for things. Whether we could get to the point where you push a button and it comes up and says, okay, this is in your favor, that's in your favor, that's in your favor, this is against you. We probably could, actually, in all honesty, given some adding some machine learning to it, another couple of years running it, we could probably get to that point. Whether we will, I don't know. I mean, I love developing. So let's see in 3 years. We'll have a conversation again in 3 years.
So do you start to see new patterns that you are intrigued by and then attempted to delve into with another 1,000 algorithms to see if you can make that work? Is it like an ongoing thing, or have you now said, right, I am done, this is just inputting data now?
No, we're done. We're just inputting data now. We know we have everything that we need that I originally, like when 5 years ago, I said, we need this, right? And we developed the first part, then we developed the second part, third part, fourth part. But we always knew we needed those four inputs to be able to make a decision. And we've finally finished those. Unfortunately, you know, you can't start day one with all four. So anyone watching this that came 3 years ago and looked at RaceStats app and didn't understand it, if they look again today, they wouldn't understand it again, because there's so much more it does now. But it is finished as far as it won't do any more than it does now. We just keep taking in the data and keep displaying it the way we do.
Right. So the question everybody's going to be asking is, you're living over there in paradise. Do you personally, does Mike O'Neill have a bot that he sets up starting from the first race in Australia to the last race in the UK, and he wakes up in the morning just and sees how much he's copped? Is that part of the deal for you?
Well, actually, for the last over a year now, almost a year, I spend all my days and nights developing. So, and because I'm developing, I can't be running the program as well. And as you found over the last couple of weeks, the internet here is not the best in the world. So if you try to go to sleep and leave it to the Caribbean, the internet and the power company too, power companies love turning off the power here as well. So no, to run a bot in Australia from here is almost, well, you're taking a huge risk. So if I'm going to play Australia, I'll stay up and play it. But as I say, for the last year, all I've been doing is developing, and with remaking Analyzer at the moment, because we found something we wanted to add to Analyzer. So we're remaking that at the moment. So by the time I get back into full-time gambling, and when I say full-time, basically what I used to do was basically just come in, make £100, and that was me done for the day. So I'd have maybe two or three bets and make £100. Whereas here in the Caribbean, well, in Dominican Republic, I need to make £30 a day. So there's a huge difference to what I need to have a good life here and what I need to have a good life in the UK. So, so I'll still be spending most of the time on the beach, but I do like to watch what's going on. And I may set up a bot for Analyzer, the new Analyzer, once we've finished that, to do what I'm investigating at the moment. So, there's lots of opportunities if you've got good internet and electricity. But here, you basically have to sit up and watch.
Okay, so we'll put the link on the website. Just remind everybody what the address is for RaceStatsApp.
Yes, it's racestatsapp.com. Simple. So RaceStatsApp.com.
Okay, and as you say, a lot of things have had to align for us to finally get this interview done. I'm a little bit
sorry
disappointed
about that.
There's no palm trees. Have you got any palm trees or beach you can show us?
Well, I can turn the camera around here for you. Whoops.
There you go. There you go, guys. All you got to do is master race stats app, and that can be your view as well. Excellent. Thank you very much, Michael Neil. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Simon, for having me. I really appreciate it. You take care, buddy.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Download the Star Sports app from the App Store or Google Play. All of the Star Sports markets, including InPlay, all easily accessible from your phone or tablet. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.